Okay, I'm recording. Welcome to the Aries Working Group call. This is the 16th of October. We ask you to mind the Hyperledger Code of Conduct and the antitrust policy. Be nice to each other and don't do illegal stuff. And that helps us all out. If you could please add your name to the attendees list, if you're willing, that helps us kind of keep track of who is where and helps people get in contact with you if they're interested in working on stuff. Are there anyone new to the call that hasn't been here that'd like to introduce themselves? We've learned that we have to do this at the beginning because it never happens at the end.
Hi, this is Gustavo Federico from Ottawa, Canada today, joining for the first time.
Gustavo, welcome. We have plenty of Canadians in the group. We're glad to have you as well.
And I'm here too, Sam, so there's another Canadian.
There's so many Canadians here. Welcome, Kalia. Glad to have you.
Hello, Kalia. Gary from South Africa.
Hey, Gary.
Welcome, welcome. Also, AJ, shout out to cleaning up the grid on the Aries Working Group call, by the way, on the wiki. I said that before you joined the audio, I think, so.
Yeah, I also kept the previous one just to ensure that it's correct. If you think it's not necessary, you can revert that.
Yeah, it looks right to me. It's got all the same stuff on it. So yeah, I definitely think we should. I noticed you left it in there, but yeah, I think that looks awesome. Thanks for doing that. Everyone loves someone who helps on the wiki, so we're grateful for your work.
Thanks.
Anyone else? All right. We're glad you're here. Okay. So announcements. We just had a whole bunch of the things that filled up our announcements. So forever ago, we started announcing that the December 3rd through 5th in Provo, Utah was going to be a Sovereign Foundation hosted Aries workshop and Connectathon. This is not specific to Sovereign. We're just hosting and hoping to get the conversation going. We actually have dates and confirmed stuff. Helen is on the call and would like to say a few words about that.
Yeah. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Okay, good. We got together and said that there was the need for this event to kind of happen. So we took it upon ourselves to find this really cool location in Utah, kind of in our neck of the woods, handy, but also gives discounts to nonprofits. So it's pretty inexpensive, and we can do this event on the cheap, which is great. But that's not to say we aren't looking for sponsors. Any and all sponsors are welcome. Venue, cover food. I mean, no one's, you know, trying to make a buck. We're just trying to keep everybody fed and happy for 3 days while they're down visiting beautiful city in the wintertime, which I think there are a few skiers out there that might appreciate that one to have the excuse to come down. So all the event, the link is there to the meetup page, but there's another link within that meetup page for you to actually register. I know I put December 1st, but as soon as possible so we can get a better head count for to account for food. If you could click on that, add your name if you're going to be there. Even if you're not going to be there, you can go back and edit later, but we'd really appreciate just to get that head count nailed down as soon as possible so we can start doing all the other planning work. And if you have any questions about sponsorship or whatever, I mean, we're going to, you know, plaster your logo, your company logo everywhere we can. Anybody is welcome to sponsor some of this stuff. And again, I put prices in here for 100 people. I'm not sure if we'll get 100 people. So it might even be lower for some of those items. Send me an email or reach out or whatever in any of the forums if you want to chat a little bit more about this event. Sound good?
Awesome. Any questions before we leave this? This was a good event last time, helped us kind of move some things forward. This is an implementation focused event. And so we hope to identify in advance the things that we desire to test and everything else. And we'll do our best while we're there to be able to share or Zoom content in or make it possible to participate remotely if you can't attend in person. This was good last time. And the link, Cam, is in the notes it's the RSVP link is there, to the meetup, and that'll get you there. So, awesome. Anyway, that's a great event. It worked. We've done this once before. It worked. There's been a bunch of sort of moving around the community. And we're hoping to do it again, to make forward progress from where we are. Any other announcements before I move along? Awesome. Okay. Related meetings review. One of the things that's happened is the identity implementers call that I'm going to highlight here does a pretty good job of tying together a whole lot of the working groups. And so we may work to reduce the related meeting announcements here based on that. That is a recorded call. So it's easy to catch up on, and you can even listen it faster than real time. And that way we don't necessarily spend as much time in all the other calls detailing this, but we still want to keep very related ones here just to help us all understand what's going on and be aware that the number one, the calls exist and what kinds of work are going on in them. So given that, any news on URSA? I don't know. I didn't see Mike. How about semantics work? Paul?
Sorry, I was on mute. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Good. We had a good call. Brent and Dell went through some of the stuff that's happening for them with the rich schema and verifiable credentials. A big topic is still this huge pilot that we're doing with Novartis. Bayer has now joined in as well. And we believe that Roche is going to join as well. So this is a really huge thing for the pharma industry. So we spoke about that. And then the last thing was Jan was talking about his privacy agreement lifecycle that he's working on. And we were kind of bouncing that around a bit. But yeah, good call.
Fantastic. Did you X? Indeed contributors. I don't see, I think Richard's off today. All right. Any other calls? Implementers, anything about my data? Okay. Let's move along to upcoming releases and work updates. PCGov, any specific updates on the Aries Cloud Agent Python?
So 3.3 was released a couple of weeks ago on PyPI. Currently we're working on, our first use case of this is a really high volume issuance of credentials. So we're trying to issue 2.5 million credentials really, really quickly. We're hitting roadblocks in the ability for Aries agents to communicate. So when we use pre-Aries things, we got reasonable transaction rates with Aries. We're, using the Aries protocols, we're getting less. So we're looking at various ways of improving that. One of the big things seems to be non-secret storage. So we're trying a quick hack, text spike basically, to save the state information of protocols into a regular Postgres database instead of one that's marshaled through the NDSDK non-secrets interface, just to see what will happen and what the performance impact will be. So that, that's not going to be a final solution, but it gives us data points on where the roadblocks, the bottlenecks are in the process. So just some updates on where we are with things.
Awesome. Thank you, Stephen. Aries Framework Go. Troy?
Hey, everybody. As usual, I posted the weekly planning notes. And feel free to join our calls on Tuesdays. We're still aiming for getting good exchange done in October. And we're doing verifiable credentials and introduction in parallel.
Awesome. Jack, SDK Ruby. I don't know that I saw Jack. Other frameworks that people want to speak up about and mention progress.
Hey there.
Sorry, Brian.
Go ahead.
This is Ajay here for Aries SDK JavaScript. We are 3 to 4 people. We have started meeting regularly on Tuesday. We're at a very initial stage. I'll just share a link here. So the tasks that we have picked up are the basic RFCs, mainly the trust ping, feature discovery, RFC 31, 48, and 35. That's what we are exploring. So Matt, Keith, and Jacob, and myself.
Excellent. Thank you for that. And if you have a link either.
Yeah.
If you add a link here, either that or add it to the wiki, either way, so that we can find it, that'd be awesome.
We'll do. We have shifted our weekly call from Tuesday to Friday. We'll update the details there.
So Fridays?
Yeah.
Okay. And then who else was speaking up?
Hi, this is Monica.
Ajay, go ahead.
Yeah, this was Ajay, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you already talked. Who else?
Hi, this is Mushmi. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Please.
On Aries SDK Java, we were busy, so we haven't met. We usually meet on Wednesdays. Plan to have the call tonight. We had a meeting with BCGov folks a couple of weeks ago, and they gave an overview of what they're doing with their frameworks. And we'll start looking at the data exchange shortly.
Awesome. Anyone else?
Hey there, this is Michael from Street Cred, and we're doing the agent framework.net updates this week on allowing transaction authors to have their transactions signed by a transaction endorser so that they can be written, so that that can be written to the mainnet. And we're also creating transaction author agreement support in the agent framework so that authors can sign that and attest that they signed it on the mainnet as well.
Awesome. Thank you for that. Any other meetings? Okay. Grateful for everyone doing work out there and making stuff happen. That's pretty awesome. Our agenda today, I've tried to plan this a little bit better in advance, and I'll be working to get this up and earlier. I hope to have the agenda mostly sort of figured out by Monday, and I'm trying to pre-link things that you can read on relevant topics so that you're ready and familiar with the things that we're talking about. Things we'll be drawing from are the things mentioned here when we talk about things that we need to talk about, as well as issues off of the Aries RFC repo we'll be pulling from. And I have tentatively added some times here just to make sure we can kind of move along and we don't get stuck on any particular discussion, but those can be flexible as needed to address the important issues we're working on. Is there any adjustments to the agenda that we need before we dive in? Okay. The first topic that's on the list today is Aries Issue 3. And this is a conversation that began last week in the morning call. Then we had a little bit of an afternoon discussion on it as well. And then conversation has been continuing in this issue in the tickets here. How do we best want to continue this discussion? Daniel, do you want to get started or should I try to mediate?
I don't want to be the spokesman. I'm feeling all talked out. Let somebody else talk.
Okay. Cam, are you good if I try and lead this?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So quick review of the proposal here. There's a list of repositories that we're talking about creating. And the idea here is that these repositories would be created and we would move relevant parts of what's currently in Indy for where there is a matching component. And then we would, before it's ready for release or introduction, we would then make the changes necessary to migrate from the framework that it was to the designs that we're hoping to accomplish inside of Aries. And so this is not, the work that's landing here is not done. It's a start, but it gets us in a place where we can actually work and make that happen. That's pretty exciting. There's not actually correlating pieces of everything. There are pieces that didn't exist in Indy that we want to exist in the future. And so we'll need to add those as well. But it would be nice to sort of get be ready to have code actually, in operation and updates happening. So here's the list of these with some discussion here. The main comment, I think mostly came from me, that there was just kind of a lot of these. And Daniel Hardman responded with a really good outline of sort of why we've ended up this way. And a lot of it is that a lot of this prior work and the teams that have been working on this was in Indy. And in there, we had kind of too much in the same repo. And so it ended up being difficult for various maintainers to be involved. And it, as far as test suites and everything else, there was a lot of surface area to cover. And so that was part of the motivation for splitting this out into separate pieces. The proposal, and this is a really good discussion here. And what I had proposed here was a simpler repo where we have an Aries SDK. And maybe SDK is the wrong word here, but the idea here is that it would contain sort of all of the basic pieces that were not really split out and designed to be different. Separate on purpose would be the Postgres backend for the Vault storage instead of the SQLite. And then any ledger based things, including Indy, would be a separate module that abided the data registry interface, which is what DRI stands for. Included, I had proposed, was both SQLite for the storage, and that can of course be compiled out if you don't want that in the final thing, as well as the did peer method as well, just so that those were sort of batteries included things that seem to be part of that. And then here's the longer discussion. I wouldn't want to read through it necessarily, but the point that Daniel made that I thought was really good, he was here. He helpfully highlighted in red. It's not about the repo structure, about how it will be tested, release version or package. It's mostly about the advantages and disadvantages of the maintainers and the contributors to the various code bases. And I think that the point was very salient. The other issue here is that there is an existing Aries wallet repo, and Cam has mentioned here that ought to be renamed whatever we decide it should be and doesn't need to exist as a separate thing. That's good framework. We need a way to make forward progress on this, and opinions for people that intend to be involved in the maintenance of this would be really, really valuable to have. So this is where people speak up, both to commit to helping with the code and to voice their opinion on the repo structure.
So there is an advantage to the simplified structure. I don't exactly agree with Sam's structure, but knowing that there is less repos means that, the work isn't like spread out. And also it makes it easier for diversity in maintainership. Because maybe one of the repos is super specific to, X company, and it only has X company's maintainers, and someone else would want to come in, it would be really hard for those two people to share maintainership. While if it was a simplified way, you would have less repos and you would have more maintainers for that, because there would be different parts that people would be maintaining.
The DRI, by the way, is like the ledger layer. It's called the data registry interface because it doesn't necessarily have to be ledger specific for the resources that it relies on. This is not necessarily the AMS is what we've been talking about, naming the actual wallet storage piece, the component previously known as a wallet. Thank you, Cam, for your comments. Other comments? I have other questions in the future, but I really want to hear anyone with an opinion about this.
What does AMS stand for?
Agent Managed Storage. This is like secret storage. There's another conversation that we had last week. It should be in the recording as well, talking about the types of things and where we want to store them. And that discussion is related, but not super dependent on the outcome of the repos, except that we'd like the repos to have happen or to happen so that we can then move forward.
So I have one question. So when people develop their own AMSs, will they push that to Hyperledger? So are we going to end up with one repo containing multiple wallets? Like,
no, you wouldn't. So you no. So an AMS would just provide basically like the API base of it or of the wallet, and then you would have separate repos for different implementations of that AMS, like Postgres, SQLite. Or that's what was originally proposed. There's other opinions on this as well.
Yeah, so the idea is that this is not a, you know, an end user app. We're not talking at that level. We're talking about libraries that can be used by those things to manage secrets and the other sorts of data that an agent needs to manage. There will be a generic interface designed carefully to present misuse, etc. And there is a need. SQLite is really handy for batteries included, being able to just pull the code out and have it actually running. Obviously, for performance reasons, using something like Postgres as a backend is really useful. If you wanted to contribute a new storage backend, there's an interface that you would contribute to. And if you have a one separate from Postgres, you would do that. The idea is that anyone sharing the, you know, the sort of the central wallet infrastructure and code would just use those libraries as is. So you wouldn't really contribute a separate Aries AMS. You would just either use it or not. And it is possible to be protocol compliant without using this, but there's a lot of advantage in reusing sort of these core components to not have to reinvent with good practices everywhere.
The overriding feeling I have is that we're going to get the names wrong. So if we're trying to make a decision about perfect names, I think we're wasting our time. I care a lot more about having some repos that we can put stuff in, and being cheerful about changing the name later. Does anybody feel like having the name exactly right is the important consideration here?
I don't, for one.
All right. So I can be cheerful about any set of repos as long as we create something and move ahead. And as long as we don't get so wedded to the names that we think we've, answered the question for all time. For example, AMS and KMS are still up in the air. I thought we had gotten to closure on that, and then had, I feel like, a bunch of objections raised out of the blue. And so I'm not feeling at all settled on those terms. DRI. The I in DRI is not different from the I that should be on AMS but isn't, or some other things. They're all interfaces that have pluggable components to them. So either we put I on all of them or we don't. So let's just create repos and get started on getting getting something useful in them, and we can fiddle with the names after the fact. I do want to say this. I saw in the comment stream somebody saying plus one to a simplified repo approach. I don't believe for a second that this is a simplification to put it in a repo. I'm not saying it's a complication either. It's a transfer of complexity. So please don't think that it's a slam dunk that putting everything in a repo together or in a few repos as opposed to lots simplifies life. It transfers complexity from one place to another. The people that were doing this in Indy before hated having too few repos. They begged multiple times to be able to split the repos out and were not allowed to. And I think they had good reasons for their arguments. I'm not arguing in favor of the other one either. I'm mainly just trying to say, let's go into this with our eyes wide open. This is a complex problem no matter how you cut it.
Appreciate your commentary there, Daniel. Cam, you mentioned that you might not slice it the way that I proposed. Do you have thoughts on how you would slice it?
Seeing that the wallet is a key component, I would have that outside of the Aries SDK, but that's the only part that I would say that I would argue against.
So you would be pulling these two pieces out. Do you like the idea of having the SQLite in the same repo or a separate one?
Yeah, I see it as possible, but I think we just need to get something out there. I just think we need to get an interface out there.
One comment on that I've heard from Ian, so I'm just passing on the things. In the Indy SDK right now, from what I understand, there's actually three implementations. There's a memory one, a SQLite, and a Postgres. And from what I understand, like one of them, and I think it's the memory one, is not pluggable. So I think we should avoid that in the future, that they should all be pluggable. And that if there are three implementations, they should be done the same way. So again, a detail in that, but something to keep in mind as we shift over.
Yeah, I think the memory one just was made for testing, not for production use.
Yeah, which is maybe the right thing to do for the batteries included one.
Maybe. I would like the batteries included one to be something I can, for example, stick on a Raspberry Pi and run or on my desktop and have some persistent storage. But I agree with this common interface, right? I think that having a pluggable one that also does memory is not harder necessarily, but keeping consistent, I think that would be useful. I think the main part that people wanted to get started on so it sounds like what we should do, well, hang on. I think wallet is obviously a major point of interest as we move forward and try to get some iteration on that. And so Cam, I think what you're proposing is that we, nodding to Daniel, is the fact that we're not going to get the name quite right and we can adjust it in the future. We should create a repo that starts with wallety things. That way we can get started on stuff and then we can begin creating other repos as necessary. And we can have some discussions about the right interface.
Right. Yeah. That's what I would prefer.
So it feels to me like we need a place where we can put the things that are currently highlighted in blue and the things above and below them in the same bulleted list in repos. If we say that the blue ones go in the repo currently named agent or Aries-wallet and possibly renamed to something, then can we put all the others in one repo for now, or should we put all of them in separate repos? What's the proposal on the table for those?
You mean for the above and the below, the pack and unpack and the DRI interfaces?
Yeah.
I would say that to stick those in Aries SDK.
Is SDK, I mean, we're not going to get it perfect, but is Aries SDK totally the wrong name for that? I know we had libindie rather than indie SDK.
Here's the 1 or 2 minute discussion that I think is worth having on that. Do we expect that repo names map to artifact names? Because I think people who build on the lower levels of Aries probably want to have an SDK type experience, right? Where they basically say, give me the SDK, plop it down here as a dependency in my world, and now I'm going to build on it. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to consume a repo named Aries SDK. So I just, do we want to make the assumption that the repo should be kind of named after the package that developers above it consume? Yes or no? If the answer is yes, then I think Aries SDK is a reasonable name.
I think the answer is yes to that.
I think it is, except that most people are not going to come grab the C callable thing. They're going to grab some language binding that makes it easier to interact with. So I agree with you, right, but with the complication that the language specific stuff also matters.
Right, but they don't care what you call it or what the artifact or the repo is, because they're not ever going to see it.
That's a fair point.
The person you're talking about, what Daniel's talking about, is the person who's going to build the framework, cloud agent, you know, those pieces that embed those, that become the dependencies in what the higher level people use.
Right. So I think most developers that come to Aries and want to get value are probably not going to be interested in this thing that we're debating calling an SDK. They're going to be interested in Aries Cloud Agent Python, or they're going to be interested in Aries Framework Go or something along those lines. And that's a higher level construct than this low level SDK.
Traditionally, an SDK has been a higher level umbrella thing, like with documentation, with source code, with samples, with compiled binary libraries, like if you go back into history, right?
Yeah, I wonder if what we're talking about here really is a little bit more like, I don't know how many of you have Windows in your DNA background, but I used to work in a world where people used the Windows DDK. That's the device driver kit. It was very low level, and it was very different from writing against the Win32 API. So calling it an SDK may, to Michael's point, set an expectation about who the audience is that's probably inaccurate. But like I said at the outset, getting the names right is probably impossible anyway. So maybe we just call it whatever seems reasonable and start.
Would Aries Core be a terrible name?
No.
Or Aries Runtime, if you just want to focus on the runtime components and not the documentation and samples.
Yeah, something in that ballpark feels a little bit better to me, but I don't. I'll vote for anything that makes it happen in the next, makes us get to closure in the next 5 minutes.
Yeah, I would plus one the core. That just simple, you know.
Okay, so I'm going to just create a comment down here.
That was going through my head as well, core, as we were talking about that. So I kind of like it.
So we're going to do Aries Core. I'm putting this in a comment so we can talk about it on the screen here, and then there's a record of this. And then Aries AMS, given that we probably will get the name wrong and we'll need to rename it, and that's fine. And those seem to be the two main things that we need, right? So this has pack and unpack, and this has the and this has the peer did implementation as part of it. Let me just put it that way. And then Aries AMS has the interfaces, right? And maybe a memory implementation. Seems like having that available for testing would be speed the whole thing up, you know, for regression testing stuff. I should spell it right though. I'm terrible at this.
When you say SQLite and memory, you're really talking about providers. You're actually talking about implementations of providers for those, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah. Because I think there needs to be a little more, just in the last couple of weeks, a little more separation between the driver library that sits on top of the interface and the common interface that sits on top of these different drivers.
Yes. So
the common interfaces that sit on top of these different providers. Yeah.
Right, right. So there's some stuff that AMS does. And there's some arguments about what precisely it should be doing and where, but the idea is that you're going to call methods to store things like create a key pair or, you know, make me a new DID, and then it will do things internally and then internal to its own processing. And then it also stores stuff in the storage layer, and the storage layer is relatively uniform. But obviously for performance reasons is implemented in a variety of ways. And that's where having you know, various implementations are really helpful there. So
when you say AMS interface, are you talking about just the declaration of the interfaces, or are you also talking about the implementation of the interface?
Both.
Okay. Because that can be confusing when you have it that way. You can have storage specific drivers, and then you can have common driver code. And then above that is the common interface that sits above everything.
I'll call it storage interfaces for now.
So it looks like we have a majority on Aries core. So,
and let me pause for a second while anyone has a chance to object. We haven't. Okay, yeah. And if there's a reason, Daniel, if someone wants to split out the data registry stuff, I think we can have that conversation. I don't think we need to be as locked as we were over in Indy. But this helps us move forward. Are we going to rename something? Is Aries Core a new one and Aries AMS a rename from Aries Wallet?
That sounds pretty reasonable to me.
If we agree for Aries AMS, I can. We can contact Rye Jones in the Aries chat to change it.
Yep.
I might be able to change it too. Rye recently gave me permission to do something like that. It was a little bit different permission. Let me go see what I can do.
And then Aries Core is a new repo. Do we want to briefly talk about who are the initial maintainers for these repos should be? Cam made a point that having some variety would be really helpful. I'm not sure I'm the right person for Sovereign necessarily for all these pieces, but we could have someone from Sovereign be involved.
And I think any organization is welcome to, you know, nominate themselves. It's just, it comes with a, you know, 1 hour or 2 hours a week kind of commitment to your developer to check pull requests and, you know, things like that.
Yes.
Do we want to say that whatever maintainers exist for a repo, they're supposed to come to the Aries maintainers call too?
Do we have an Aries maintainer call?
Well, we have an indie maintainers call that has kind of bled across. So no, we don't have one right now, but I'm assuming at some point we will get serious about this and coordinate across the larger Aries ecosystem and that would be an important thing. I don't feel like it's a good idea to have maintainers for repo A and repo B part of a project not talk to each other.
I agree. I think the very minimum is you need to be active in the Aries maintainers RocketJet channel. And then I think we should coordinate calls as necessary to be useful. So maybe it's a morph of the indie maintainers, or maybe we need a separate one that's very, you know, focused on this layer and maintainers of that layer. It might be helpful to make it not just necessarily a maintainers call, but a specific maintainers call, meaning the sort of the core common library of Aries as opposed to Aries implementations. But yes. Do we want to talk about, I think Cam's volunteered for on behalf of Kiva, and we can definitely get someone from Sovereign in there, and sounds like someone from Evernote. are there other organizations that would like to be represented in the maintainers of these repos?
I don't know if Kyle's on the call, but I think he would be a good representative for Aries Core since he wrote a lot of Pack on Unpack.
I'm going to include a question mark for people who have not said yes in person. Is Sergey the right one for Evernym, Daniel?
For now, yeah.
And then I'll stick Meave now, and we may request that to be changed later. And then is there, as far as the wallet pieces, I know,
which BC Gov guys are still kind of deep in wallet stuff right now? I know that Ian did a bunch of stuff with the Postgres wallet and that kind of started out as his baby. And I don't know who's kind of got their head fully in that space and whether they would want to be involved, but that would be a logical person to add.
So I'm moving this over there, and I am really badly misspelling everything today. Okay, so I've also listed this to indicate that it's not part of this as a separate implementation, and I think that mimics the way that it is now. Maybe I may be wrong about that. So I'm going to add Cam and Sergey here, and I'll volunteer someone from the foundation.
I'd say Ian as well there, possibly. I'd have to confirm with him.
And I'll stick me on there until I delegate. That way I make myself do it. Any objections to this approach? I think either between what Daniel can already do and reaching out to Rye, he'll be able to make these changes. And we don't have, notably absent from this conversation is Richard, who I want to make sure he has a chance to respond to this.
I think Richard, so not to speak for him, but I think his concern was that Evernim was going to bring in a lot of code. And so they wanted, you know, someone to represent, you know, that, or their code as well. So in these repos, so I think having at least one person is reasonable. I know that the team there might be concerned because of time zones and they'd like to move quickly, but we can discuss that as we go along.
So the thing too, and this is code, this could be a further discussion, but I think we ought to be clear in the readmes for this code when it moves over, that this is not yet ready for production. Meaning the code is here so we can work on it to get to that point, but it's not, you know, if you're expecting to check it out and build on top of it today, you're going to end up with cuts and bruises just because of the roughness of the code. I think we need to be clear about that until we reach a state that we can agree that, you know, it's actually, you know, we start slapping a version number on it. In the beginning, it's going to be real rough as we have discussions about how to change the approach.
I don't know if Mike Lauder's on the call, but I think for Aries AMS, he would be a good maintainer because he wrote, I think it's called Lock or
Lox. Yeah. Lox is a design that he's got. Yeah.
That was proposed for the KMS. And so, you know, that would be a good person as well.
Yeah. I'm going to volunteer him instead of me. That's probably the better match for AMS. Okay. Okay. Any objections to what we have here on the screen?
I just have one question. Is the AMS and storage interface the same one that we use in Indy? So we just move the code. We don't have another interface, something different than the one that exists now.
I think the idea is that we would start there. There's some threading model changes that we're discussing. And there will need to be some minor changes to be more ledger agnostic than the Indy code currently is. But I think the goal is to start with where we are with Indy. Does that help?
Yeah.
This is there. I don't think anyone really wants to start from ground zero because that's full of headaches. But so starting from where we are there and then discussing necessary changes, I think is the approach that will get us there sooner. Okay. Final call for comments on this.
Yeah, could we put possibly Andrew in as Aries Core?
Yep.
There's a possibility.
More diversity there is better so long as we don't get to an unwieldy state. We'd also discussed, we can of course make these changes and adapt later, but we'd also discussed requiring, setting up Git to require two approvals for a merge. And that's easier to get to if we have a wider diversity of maintainers, just from a logistics perspective.
I think that could bog down the Postgres work.
This would not require that necessarily. The separate and implementations.
I was joking anyway.
Oh, sorry.
I was joking anyway. Don't worry about it.
I missed it, Stephen. Sorry. Okay. Final comment or final call for comments. Okay. I'm hitting add on this and then we can move on to a different topic. And we'll see how close we can get to making this happen. I want to make sure that Richard is not on this call and was involved in the previous conversation. So we'll probably need to not settle this within the next 30 minutes, but hopefully we can move together pretty fast on this.
The Aries wallet repo is already made. So if any pull request or if anyone has a pull request for it, they're welcome to make it and then I can review it. So that's okay. Including Evernym. If Evernym wants to get started, you know, right away, then we can start working on that.
Well, and these other repo changes are fast. These can happen within a day of us, you know, verifying consensus. Okay. Daniel, I had you on the list. This was the next under the next week stuff from the last one to talk about your PR on the test suite.
Okay.
Can you talk about that?
Sure. So the quick thing is that we had proposed to make the test suite more important in how RFCs progress status-wise, such that if you have a protocol that you're writing and you propose that it be moved to the accepted status, you have to point to tests that can be run to prove that somebody is conformant to the protocol. That's the essence of the PR that got raised. And I feel like the PR was not too controversial, and I socialized it at IIW and got a moderate amount of positive feedback. But then John Jordan raised some questions about it, and so I didn't want to merge unless without giving people a chance to push back. So my goal for this conversation would just be, does anybody feel like it's a bad idea to require tests before we can say a protocol has been implemented and is worthy of acceptance? And if so, you know, what's your counter proposal? If not, can I go ahead and merge this?
So my concern with it would be that if you add it to the, if you make it an error that we can't merge things because of the CI/CD, that we're back to everything becomes a proposal, right? So my suggestion would be to make them warnings at this point and for the foreseeable future, and that when we discuss promotions, we look at whether there's warnings and decide whether we want to accept those warnings or move forward. So not make them errors, not make them kill the CI/CD. Assuming that that's still the approach being taken. I listened to part of the recording the other day from a couple of weeks ago, and that's what I heard.
So what we've done right now is if we were to turn on this rule and enforce it, there would be something like 10 or 12 places where something is claimed as an implementation, but there are no tests to prove it. And right now I went into the unit test for CI/CD and grandfathered those things in. So we would start enforcing the change moving forward, and then we would have a backlog of things that we'd have to clear out. And George Aristi said, well, what's the plan to clear those out? And I don't have an answer. So that's a weak point in my plan. The notion of doing it as warnings instead feels to me like we would just ignore it. We don't really have any process that looks at warnings, and telling ourselves we would look at it later feels kind of iffy, but you know, what I'm proposing is iffy too. So I'd love to hear other thoughts.
Yeah, so Daniel, this is Troy. In general, I think test suites are a good idea. And I think I was trying to make this point in the chat channel, maybe on a previous call as well, that I guess my main concern becomes if the test suite maintenance becomes like a gatekeeper function, maybe it's due to bandwidth of the people working on test suites or the general interest in a particular protocol, and that becomes a gatekeeper kind of function. That's where my concern would come from.
So my assumption is that if you're writing a protocol, you, the writer of the protocol, has to go in and update the test suite. There's not some other group of people that does maintenance of the test suite for you.
Yeah, sorry, yeah, I kind of assumed that, but I guess I was getting at the merging of an author's test suite contribution. I hope that we don't turn that into a gatekeeper function, that there's like a, there's some kind of easy process for that author to push that test suite contribution in. And we're pretty clear on what the criteria for getting it in would be.
Yeah, that's a good point. There's nothing in here that talks about what are the criteria for accepting a contribution to the test suite. I would assume that the criteria would be relatively relaxed. Like, you can contribute a test that is for a protocol that has not yet, you know, received any elevated weight in the community. You know, it's just some experimental protocol, but you still want to put a test for it in the suite. And because the suite is intended to, you know, only exercise features that an agent claims it has, it would just ignore that on all the agents that don't pretend to have that feature. So it would not be a dangerous thing or a controversial thing to put new tests in the test suite. But that's all assumption. You're making a good point that it's not written down anywhere. The place that it would be logical to write that down would be in an RFC about the test suite, and there is no such RFC. But I started a HackMD document where I wrote a whole bunch of questions that we might want to answer in such an RFC, and invited community comment, and I didn't get very much. So maybe I should just start throwing out answers and see if everybody freaks out.
Yeah, nice.
My response to it is a little more squishy. I really love this idea, but I would be more confident if we had more movement or activity on the test suite at this point. And we haven't. And I know that there are efforts underway to make that happen. So I like this concept in general. And when Steve was talking about, you know, moving this to a warning status, I think if the CI/CD outputs a warning, I think someone has to go like override the warning in GitHub. So it takes an action, and it's a little less hard to ignore, because we're going to have to merge something. We'd have to make it happen. And so I wonder if we could start by doing that and see what the flow is like as we gain some more experience with getting stuff into the test suite. So my proposal is we start with a warning with the intent to understand how it works, and then move it to something more robust. And I understand that those moves to something more robust are difficult to make happen. But I don't think it would be any different than our current conversation necessarily.
When you guys talk about starting with a warning, do you mean just modifying the output text from the test runner such that it no longer says error colon and a sentence, but it says warning colon and a sentence? Or do you mean changing the test runner so that it outputs something to standard out or standard error, but it doesn't change its exit status code from 0 to 1?
It doesn't change the exit status from 0 to 1.
Okay, so if that's the case, then you won't see any report about it on GitHub, Sam. You're not gonna, there's no actionable output that you can go poke at on GitHub. That's, GitHub decides whether to act on something or whether to impute good or badness based on the exit code.
Yeah, I'd feel more comfortable with the proposal if it still made some noise in GitHub, but I'm not as familiar with the GitHub CI/CD integration.
Well, I can change it right now. If warning is what people want, I can change it so that the exit code is not changed, and we just write to standard out a complaint about bad stuff, and then you know, we can decide to get more serious later. I think it will be unfortunate if we don't get serious pretty soon, because part of the reason why we don't have any noise or movement on the test suite, to your point, Sam, is because we're not enforcing it. Nobody cares. We all care theoretically, but nobody cares in terms of getting a task done today, because the test suite is like a completely optional thing that we can afford to ignore.
Point well received.
If that's the vote, should we just see if that's the vote? I'll just change the logic so it doesn't fail the CI/CD.
The other way to go would be to change it on the grants. Since you've already coded in the grandfather ones, then put the warning on the grandfathered ones and error on future ones. I'm worried it's going to, well, we'll see. But anyway, I just don't want to see us revert back everything to propose, just because we want to be able to have, to be able to merge anything, because you can't merge anything without that, all of those tests in place. My understanding, the CI/CD runs every time, so nothing would be able to be merged until those get done. So, by simply grandfathering them in, they'll never get done, because there's no warning at all.
Nothing would be able to be merged with an accepted status.
So it'll still merge with a different status. I think I understand the reluctance that this, nothing's going to happen to clean up the old stuff. I think that one of the focuses we can have as we approach like the Connectathon in December is identify the core collection of those that we actually want to write tests for, and as a community work towards that as a goal for that event. So I think that if we didn't have the event planned, I'd say, yeah, it's probably not going to happen. But since we are planning this, I think that that's a really good target, and we could use that as a mechanism to make progress.
Okay.
So I have I have zero reservations. What we've talked about is a compromise moving to a warning, Daniel. I would like it to be stronger than that. But I have no reservations at accepting at that level. So we can start there, and then I think that we can make the case separately for strengthening it in the future.
Okay, I'll do that. This would, by the way, it would update the README to say that the rule that we're following is, you know, don't do this. Something shouldn't be accepted without tests. So the documentation would be guiding people in our intended direction, even if the warnings are a weak signal.
Yes. And I think keeping the stronger language in the docs is probably the right answer.
Another possibility would be to highlight the accepted ones that don't have a test case for them.
Oh, that's an idea. What if we actually said you can only grandfather something if you put a piece of text in the RFC saying this RFC is ignoring our standard and we need to fix it. So that way everybody who's looking at implementation comments at the bottom of an RFC sees the ugliness.
That would work, or we could also highlight it in the generated index, Daniel.
Oh.
Gets an ugly mark next to it.
That's what I was thinking. Ugly mark in the generated index. I like the ugly mark. We'll have to Google for that.
Okay.
I'm not sure what an ugly mark looks like, but.
Okay, you're making me feel happier. I'll go down the path and come back with an implementation of these ideas, and then everybody can weigh in on it. But it should be a fast thing of just, you know, a 10-minute review of what it's doing and see if you like it at that point.
Awesome. Daniel, I realize this is kind of thankless work, and I appreciate your work here.
Well, it's actually very rewarding to see the quality of the RFCs be high and the quality of our metadata about them and so forth. So it pays off eventually.
It is good. Other comments on the test suite? Okay. Our next topic is issue 225, which is updating the message type and the protocol identifier URIs to HTTPS. This is related to this is the message type and protocol identifiers. This is moving away from the DID thing that we have been using previously. And there's been a bunch of consensus that we need to move, but we're sort of stalled. And Daniel's latest comment, I think, summarizes this well. We need a URL to use, and the community had previously said that Aries.hyperledger is a good idea. The problem is that it's not currently set up for that. So do we use something else, or what are we changing here? And one of the things that Dana proposes is that we end up moving to something more like DIDCOM, which would be more generic and not specifically tied to Aries. And that would sort of grease the skids for wider adoption of that. And then Daniel threw the ball to me here. So I wanted to bring this up and figure out and how we can sort of unblock this concept.
So I had one question on strategy 2 about allocating a web server. So did GitHub Pages not work for this scenario? So is that why we'd have to allocate a web server, or we didn't like GitHub Pages?
Well, with GitHub Pages, you can't transform the content in arbitrary ways. You can transform the content to the way GitHub Pages wants you to transform it. So you'd end up doing maybe more redirects. An example of the kind of thing that would be an awkwardness is that we want the version of a protocol to be in the URI, but today the structure in our repo doesn't embed version numbers anywhere in file or folder names. So we would, just by using GitHub Pages, we would not have an easy way to do that redirect. We could do it. It's much harder than simple GitHub Pages.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. I assume this is just static content anyway, so I'm sure whichever strategy doesn't matter too much. Just curious.
We might have this problem twice. We might have one for all the stuff that ends up being DIDCOM specific, and if there are Aries protocols that are not being targeted for broad adoption outside of Aries, then we may have Aries specific ones as well to handle.
That was the other thing that kind of made me bite my fingernails and say I'm not sure what to do.
Right. Well, and if we have to stand something up, I mean, so the naive answer here is we just end up pointing to to something that we can do. You're right, with GitHub Pages or GitHub. That's an imperfect solution, and sort of pins us to specifically to GitHub in a way that if GitHub decided to change their operation or change how they work something, we can end up having to do sort of a hard fix. Where we declare in the community that, URI X is equivalent to the old URI, and that way, we have a way of sort of antiquating things over, or of handling the legacy problem.
On my comment on the URL, I don't think it was that important if it was specifically aries.hyperledger.org or something else like didcom.org. I think when I was thinking about it, the main point was that we have kind of a community sponsor that's holding the domain name. So I don't think I have concerns either way, personally.
The virtue that I like about didcom.org is I feel like we're baking into these URIs some expectation about who's the sponsor in a way that would be better left out. So didcom.org doesn't have that flaw. It just says, the subject that we're talking about is didcom, and here's some stuff underneath didcom that you need to be able to go find, and whether Hyperledger is sponsoring it or Diff is sponsoring it or IETF eventually picks up didcom is all irrelevant. And so the URI could be stable across tweaks like that.
Yeah, makes sense to me.
I think that's probably the right answer, Daniel. And I noticed that you grabbed it so that it didn't walk off, and then we can transfer it to whoever needs.
Yeah. So I could just contact IT at Hyperledger right now and say, okay, can I give you this domain name, please? And can you please give us a web server where we can emit static content from our CI/CD pipeline, and then we'll just transform the RFCs into didcom.org/whatever path we want to generate. Does that sound like the right answer?
There's only one variant of that answer, which would be that we do the exact same thing with diff. One of those two, I think, is probably the right answer. I don't think Hyperledger has a problem functionally doing the hosting. There is some discussion around the Hyperledger's role as a code development organization instead of a specification body. And so I think that's really the only difference. But I think the outline that you've approached is that we stand this up and then we can handle it this way is the right one. But I don't yet know precisely the right answer about whether that's we should reach out to diff immediately for that, or we should reach out to Hyperledger immediately for that. Any thoughts?
Well, we could always see who helps us faster.
Let's race.
The Hyperledger IT guys were ready to do something for me. All of the delay here has been on my side. I got all excited when we finally made a decision on this because Troy kind of held our feet to the fire, and I thought that was great. I went charging out of the gate and immediately like smacked my head into, wait a minute, what about this and what about that? And I talked to the IT guys and they're like, well, just give us the rewrite rules and tell us what you want. We'll do it. And right now the ticket is marked like resolved because I couldn't make up my mind. I can unresolve it whenever I want, but for the time being, they're not doing anything about it.
Okay, so I have a proposal. Let's do it with the Hyperledger guys because it'll happen and it'll happen fast. And if this needs to transfer, I feel like the conversations with the DIDCOM discussion, everything else, are not yet to a point where this answer becomes, I think the answer is eventually probably obvious, the eventual answer, but the short answer is that it's going to be faster to get this done through Hyperledger than it is through diff right now. So let's stand it up. And I don't think there's going to be an issue in the future of transferring this from one sponsor to another, as you've described previously.
Okay. So I'm unstuck then. I will go down the route of didcom.org is a web server that Hyperledger IT provides for the time being. And we will see if we can get that stood up. And then we can worry about if we want to change the sponsor as a separate question in the background.
I like that. Would anyone like to object to this approach? Now that I said that, I'm mildly worried that anyone who objects is going to be saddled with the process of solving the problem. But please, if someone does have an objection, we want to hear it now. Okay. I'm not hearing any dissenting voices. This is an easy thing to change in the future. Okay.
Okay, good. I'm unstuck. I'll charge ahead then. Thanks.
Thank you, Daniel, for that. Okay, that's what I had. I was trying to not overstuff this meeting as I have failed previously. We've got about 15 minutes left. I would really love feedback from the community on what you feel like the most important issues or topics are for discussion next week. I try to make a good judgment about what's urgent and what's important and try to like put those schedules together, but I'm very, very excited to have outside feedback about what people want to talk about.
It's not really a full topic, but if we hear any updates about this envelope topic, that's always going to pique my interest.
The DIDCOM discussion, yes. I can give a quick update now if you'd like, and then we can plan for that in the future, of course. Is that okay?
Sounds great to me.
So At IW, we had a bunch of discussions about about DIDCOM and the encryption envelope. And we've been discussing changes that we want to make to the one that we've provisionally been using inside of IndyThen Aries. A couple things were really obvious. One is that there is broad desire far outside of the Aries community to actually standardize on this particular topic. Part of it was that I think people understood the name. We're trying to establish a secure communication layer that sits on top of DIDs and DID docs, and that's why we called it DID communication. There appears to be there is wide interest in making this happen. So at IW, we started some conversations. I collected a bunch of email addresses there for people that would like to be involved. I have not yet executed on having those email addresses because there has not been a resolution. This factor is complex because it involves the legal foundations of both Hyperledger, where of course the Aries project here lives, and the Decentralized Identity Foundation, or the DIF, and how they ended up being created. And a lot of that is just how they ended up being created at the time, but it has an effect on intellectual property rights restrictions. And here's a summary for anyone unfamiliar with this. If people get together to create a spec for something, for interoperability, and there happens to be someone who has patents that covers some aspect of that, you end up with a legal blocker that will prevent large companies from actually implementing that or implementing the specification because they're afraid to get sued because of willful infringement on a patent. The way to solve this problem is to set up have contracts signed by the relevant parties in an organization that will help protect the intellectual property right issues that surround that. The contracts there are relatively straightforward. There's an interesting difference in that the Hyperledger organization is primarily a code development organization, not a spec development organization. And so the end result is that we get to have really open calls where you don't really have to sign anything or be a member to join. And that's been really useful. And that's primarily useful if all of the conversations we have are around code we intend to create within the project. With this broad interest surrounding more of this, there's more sticky IPR issues that are not well covered under the approach that Hyperledger has around their projects, and it happens to be that the Decentralized Identity Foundation has a legal foundation that is more oriented to becoming a standards development organization or the development of specification. There's conversations going on, and Reuven, the executive director over at the DIF, is working on trying to sort out some of the complexities of picking up work that was incubated here in Hyperledger and then continue those conversations in the DIF to make sure that IPR stuff can happen. And then also figuring out whatever adjustments need to be made to meet the needs of having an open conversation while still hitting all of the legal checkboxes we need for IPR restrictions. So those conversations are ongoing. There's no broad decisions been made. And there's still, email threads and things happening to help that process along. And that's a little bit of an update about where we are. Any questions? I said everything I know about the topic, but are there any questions?
Yeah, Sam. So DCO does not cover a spec. It only covers code. Is that what the assessment is?
It is. And if it's a design doc around the code, like a lot of our things in Aries have more or less been, it's fine. We're legally covered sufficiently for the purposes of developing code, but yes, you're correct. So the DCO is the main legal mechanism in use by Hyperledger to solve these problems around their projects. And there is, I'm forgetting the acronym, but there's another thing you have to sign that covers the broader community type of a thing if what you're creating is not primarily oriented towards a code base. Um, but it's more or less a legal contract that has to be signed either by the person, if they're an independent, fully independent, if they are working for someone or on behalf of someone, either as an employer or as a contractor, then the organization paying them actually has to be involved in signing that as well. Some interesting nuance: you don't have to be a signer of something like that to listen to a conversation, but you have to be a signer of something like that to contribute to the conversation, or you risk causing a legal problem with whatever you said. So it's likely going to be that anyone is free to listen to recordings or even listen live. But if you want to say anything in the call, then you'll need to be a signer of the relevant legal documents.
I would clarify that even further, though. You can point out problems. As long as you're not pointing to solutions, you're also fine.
You can. You're correct. You just can't. You can point out problems, but you can't point out any solutions. And so there's a fair amount, though, of trying to cover all the bases during a live call on who's actually saying what. There's the legal issues, and then there's how you practically implement the legal restrictions. And you're right. You can say stuff on a call, so as long as you're not contributing. But it becomes a difficult thing to verify and make sure that absolutely no breaches have happened. So that, Brent, you are correct in your refinement of what I said.
I guess I'm just pointing out it's even hairier than you're saying. It's a mess.
Yes. Yeah. It's a hairy thing. I know way more about IPR restrictions over the past couple of weeks than I kind of ever wanted to know, as I've tried to figure this issue out. The goal of this is that we want to be as interoperable as we can at the scope that's possible. And this has been targeted by pretty much everyone as like the thing that will help us get closer to interoperability than anything else. Which is why we're trying to figure this problem out. So that's the status of this. I think we're making really good progress. And I think there's some conversations that are with lawyers that are going on right now also, for historical sake, the DIF was created on top of the JDF, and Hyperledger is on top of the Linux Foundation, and the Linux Foundation absorbed the JDF, but there's still pre-existing differences in how the legal frameworks are set up. And the good news is that the lawyers we're consulting are the Linux Foundation lawyers that are familiar with both of those situations, and so they're helping try to sort out any issues and make sure this stuff happens in the best way possible. So I anticipate everyone hates another call, but I anticipate that conversation will get started sometime in the next week or two, with some a little bit of the orientation, kind of what I just described, and then some mechanics of how to help people sign the relevant legal stuff to be involved, and then the conversation will continue from there. Hopefully that was useful and not incredibly boring. Also, I want half of my time for the past couple weeks back. But it's worth it if we make the progress we need to. Okay, so, and I'd be happy to update that in the future when I have more to say. There's not anything really more to say. There's not like I'm holding on to things. There's not really anything more to say than about that topic right now. Other things that we want to talk about next week. What's blocking us the most? What do we need to get unblocked on?
How about data exchange?
So resolving issues surrounding data exchange, the data exchange protocol.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Okay, there's two votes for that. That'll make next week. Other topics.
Does that also include that attachment discussion? There's a bunch of issues related to DIT exchange that have come up.
So the problem that actually could be binding is generic enough that it does not, like, now I have to unmarshal it back to this.
George, I think you're unmuted because I can hear background.
It took me a second to figure out if that was a background conversation or someone's trying to speak up. Okay, so signed attachments is one of those things. There's a handful of issues around Data Exchange. The signed attachments gets around a handful of them and simplifies some things in the process, so that's really good. But yes, we'll make that a topic for next week. And I will try to get links in Monday or before to help for anyone that wants to read up on the topics. Daniel, is this different than, this is the test suite doc that you referred to that you were looking for community feedback on. That's the test suite doc there, right?
Is it the HackMD one?
Yes. Okay. So we also have the consent receipts and delegatable creds, which...
Daniel, you want to talk about that next week?
Yeah, that would be good.
I'm not going to be available next week. I'm going to be traveling.
Okay. Well, we could, I don't feel like I have deadlines that are making me need to talk about it next week. We could go 2 weeks from my opinion, but I'd be curious to know if Jan Lindquist wants to be faster. Let's assume that we can do it in 2 weeks instead.
Okay.
Okay. I will also, this is good. I'll also troll through for relevant issues and link them here. And then if there's any urgent stuff that comes up, I can add it to the next meeting's agenda as well. Thanks everybody. Sometimes these conversations are painful, but trying to figure out what's blocking us and sorting out what we can do about that is really what we need to move forward the best. So thanks everybody for coming. Any final parting words? All right. Thanks everybody for coming. I appreciate the progress that we made today, and I will get the recording posted tonight or tomorrow. Thanks everybody for coming.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.